Well, hey, welcome everybody. This is Dave. I hope you have found the material useful, stimulating, understand the principles and the application. I'm interested in any thoughts or feedback or questions about either the fundamentals or the application that we've talked about so far. And of course, we're not done. We've talked about the first four steps of the roadmap system. Last time, we're going to talk about the final three. This time, along with some application, but particularly look at applications to wellness in seminar four. Questions or thoughts or clarifications or just any feedback any of you have? Anyone? Is this what you expected, and is it meeting your expectations in terms of understanding and application? I'm interested in feedback. It will be helpful to me to know if this is hitting the mark or not, or if there are additional things that you'd like me to focus on or even clarify. While you're getting warmed up then, I'm going to go ahead and start on our seminar for today, and that'll give us some more time at the end to have discussion, questions. Hang on, and we'll talk at the end and jot down anything you'd like to talk about or any questions or application or even especially applications to your coaching clients, those of you who are professional coaches. Okay, we're going to talk about mapping wellness strategies. We've talked last time about recognizing authorship of your wellness story, owning the story, assessing the plot and storylines, and deciding what to change. We're going to talk about the final three steps of the roadmap system. And again, remember the roadmap system is a way of deconstructing and understanding, simply informing how we listen to a story and how it's constructed in someone's mind and brain, and then how to collaboratively engage to help someone examine that and look at how to make changes. And this is the component that will actively move into the change process more so. Now, as we discuss mapping wellness strategies, I want to refer to two workbook exercises that I think might be helpful. I hope you've looked at them. Maybe you've done them. 14 Steps to Edit Your Story, page 2.12, and 5 Steps to Revise a Storyline, page 2.14. As you probably know, in working with clients, insight and understanding alone are not enough to replace an old story. How many people do you know who can tell you all there is to know about something they're struggling with? They're experts on diet, weight, nutrition, exercise, but they haven't changed. Many years ago, when I treated severe anorexics in a hospital setting in my former career, each knew more about food and nutrition than my entire treatment team of experts and myself. underlying causes are always present for any problem, often complex, multi-determined causes. But a coaching approach is to use causes, feelings, and history only as information, because at times simply doing what is currently effective dissolves barriers. As coaches, we focus on the choice architecture of this moment, of what's the best decision now and next. And people need nudges when they are least likely to make good choices. For example, when decisions are really difficult, are emotionally charged, are rare, with no experience making decisions like they are faced with right now, for which they don't get feedback, when they have trouble translating the issues into understandable terms. And remember, 90 to 95% of the operating system is unconscious, so much of what someone operates on, emotional patterns, behavior patterns, patterns of attachment to others, we see evidence of, but the deconstruction, the understanding, when it's necessary, will be important. Or, a final example, when someone persists in re-entering the old story, which etches it further in the brain each time. So, I see six crucial elements to map change. This step, step five, to map wellness strategies, six crucial elements. I believe when you understand and incorporate each of the six, you have the outline to master a life story of wellness. One, regulate states of mind. We've discussed this before, but states of mind are like software programs. They're a mind-body state that determines how you perceive and process information and how you respond. We each have many different states of mind: relaxation, alertness, anxiety, anger, centered attention. A key element is to be aware of our different states of mind and know which state works best for what purpose. For example, creative writing versus editing. Two different states of mind, two different parts of the brain. So it's useful to enter the most productive state, sustain that, and match that to the task. Brainstorming versus completing a project. Two different states of mind totally. When someone is in an emotional state, they may be marooned in their right brain, the feeling intuitive brain. The emotional brain can hijack the intellectual logical brain and hold it hostage. I've mentioned this, but I want to reiterate it here. On the homepage of MentorPath, my website, there is a webinar that's free to access, about 35 minutes, called Master States of Mind. And in it, I go into more detail and to illustrate some of how I initially began to develop some of this system. And I think it's a practical explanation with some examples that I think you'll find useful. So just an overview here of how to regulate states of mind. I believe the most important thing that we can do to achieve success is to manage emotions and regulate states of mind, because choosing the state of mind for a particular task has to do with optimum performance in that task. What do you think these people have in common? John Belushi, Marilyn Monroe, Elvis Presley, Janis Joplin, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Kurt Cobain. They never learned the critical success strategy of managing their states of mind. Using drugs, and those are just a few examples, using drugs, alcohol, or some other addictive substance or process to regulate a state of mind and manage emotions can lead to significant compromise. Your state of mind, the particular software program you use, determines the meaning you attach to a stimulus. The meaning you attach then determines your behavior. So the state of mind determines the meaning we attach, the meaning determines the behavior. So by changing a state of mind, we change a behavior. Now, there are two primary ways to regulate a state of mind: focus and physiology. Focus is what and how you focus on. From quantum physics in the brain, you get what you focus on, not what you want. Focus aligns the energy field of the brain. What you focus on or pay attention to determines your state of mind, and that determines meaning. And the meaning then will determine your behavior. So your power is what you focus on. And physiology is how you use your body, your biochemistry, to regulate your state of mind, to get grounded and centered, relaxation, deep breathing, meditation, to get grounded and centered and have access to all of your states of mind, to be able to select the specific state that is most aligned with a successful endeavor of what's next. So the important thing here is that you be able to recognize this process of getting grounded and centered, then to choose what your ideal behavior is. That's referring back to the neuroconditioning chart of recognizing any emotional trigger. There's more explanation on the webinar of the initial person, an illustration that's, of course, anonymous and confidentiality and confidential and homogenized enough that, but it's a specific illustration of how that worked initially, and I've refined it and looked at doing some research on it since to create what you see now. So your brain follows your focus, whether that's positive or negative. So this determines how effective you are in what you do. The best mentors, leaders, and teachers are the ones who ask the best questions to focus in a specific way. People thought Goliath was too big to hit. David asked, well, if he's that big, how could I miss? Starbucks founder Howard Schultz didn't ask if people wanted to buy a cup of coffee or a latte, but do you want a concept of community, a third place between home and work? So here's an exercise to determine focus. Write down three questions that put you in a peak state. Each morning, answer those three empowering questions as soon as you wake up, before your feet ever hit the floor, and feel the answer. Remember, you already ask questions to yourself, whether they're conscious or not. This just changes the focus to consciously engineering those questions that empower you. I've used this in certain instances with coaching clients, and it's made a significant difference for people and their companies or organizations when it's played out in a setting like that. So let's look a little bit more closely at developing a mantra for self-regulation. When Southern Utah University's new basketball coach Robert Reed arrived, his team ranked 217th in free throw percentage, lowest in their division nationwide. So during practice, Reed had his players develop a mantra before and after each free shot. And a mantra is simply a three-part cue, focus, and physiology. A cue is simply to remind you to do the focus and the physiology. Remember the two ways that most powerfully regulate a state of mind. So he suggested that the cue be that each time when they practice a free shot, they dribble the ball twice. And that would be the reminder, the prompt, to say a focus phrase. And he suggested something like relaxed and smooth, but ask each person to develop their own, and a deep breath in to breathe in relaxation and breathe out any tension. After the players practice this, at the end of the second year, they went from 217th to number one nationwide in their division in free shot percentage. So remember the three parts. A cue, some kind of personal gesture, something that you may do. I simply touch my index finger and thumb together before a keynote, which instantly prompts the focus and the physiology because I've already wired that. A phrase such as relaxed and powerful, and a deep breath to breathe in relaxation and breathe out tension. That takes 4 to 5 seconds. I do that before every call I receive from a mentor coaching client, before every training or teleseminar that I do. So mantras can be used in various situations, but to regulate a state of mind, especially for emotional triggers that can instantly change a state of mind. For example, some of my clients who are pro athletes and actors use it to get immediately grounded and centered for their performance. For example, in a sport that is a segment rather than a flow like basketball where you continue a flow, when it's segmented, then each play needs its own grounding and centering. One all-pro cornerback uses one word, reset. After every play, he says to himself, reset, because he knows that the most likely times that someone gets a little bit off center and makes mistakes is an emotionally charged time, when they've done very badly on the play before or when they've done something outstanding on the play before. Each can get someone off center. So mantras can help calm as well as keep you from overthinking in a high-pressure situation. And why the neuroconditioning chart is neuroconditioning, once you do this, once you look at whatever the emotional triggers are, recognize that as quickly as possible, get grounded and centered, and then move to an ideal pre-planned response. Once you do that enough, that rewires your brain. The number two element to map changes, the power is in the focus. Thoughts have a frequency, an energy field, and your focus selects that frequency. It's like saying all the channels of the radio or TV, satellite TV, are available. We choose the channel, the frequency we want, out of hundreds of possibilities. We each transmit and receive a frequency through our thoughts. So if you want to change something in your life, change the focus. Now, the bad news, if you think about what you don't want, it keeps showing up over and over. So let's look a little bit more about why this is. Quantum mechanics offers us some understanding. The quantum Zeno effect, Z-E-N-O, says the mental act of attention activates and holds in place brain circuitry. With consistent focus and repetition, these chemical links and pathways actually become stable changes in the brain structure. That is, the brain rewires. This concept offers explanation at a brain level for why a solution focus is more effective than a problem focus. This is what we do in coaching. We look at possibilities. We look at co-creating what can be next, not going back into understanding or looking at the dynamics of a problem or understanding the history of it, because going back into a problem, we now know when this happens in therapy and counseling, going back into a problem, even ostensibly to write a better solution, only etches it a little bit further in the brain each time. And this is why somebody can know all there is to know about something, but not change. New neuronal networks and pathways are created when you focus on possibilities, on solutions. The already existing circuitry is further etched when you focus on existing problems. And this is how people get stuck in the negative feedback loop of looking at something over and over, or even get stuck in understanding or in therapy. Neuroscience validates the reality that it's not understanding the source of our thoughts that's most beneficial, or the history of them, but a focus on awareness of choice, on the process rather than the content. The law of attraction is based in neuroscience. If you lay a nail and a paperclip, for example, side by side, nothing happens. But when you take a magnet and stroke the nail several times from head to point, it becomes a magnet and you can pick up the paperclip. That's because the molecules of the nail become aligned in the same direction and develop a polarity. And it can attract many objects. It's the same with your energy field. When all of you is going in the same direction and focused, you have power. You've probably all seen the film The Secret. Now, the adage there is ask, believe, and receive. I think that's two-thirds right. And some of my buddies and collaborators are on that film, and I've said the same thing to them. The law of attraction won't give you what you want. It will give you the energy to sustain the process of what you want. It won't send a Brinks truck up your driveway or align the lotto balls for you. Trust me on that one. And you can save some money. But you can align your internal molecules by focus and purpose to point to specific goals. It's a way to use your power to write the story you want. So instead of ask, believe, and receive, consider this. Ask, believe, create. The ABCs. My favorite grandmother offered her critique of the film The Secret 5 decades before it was released. She said, "Wishes don't wash dishes." Now, the paradox is that we don't attract what we want. We attract what we focus on. Everyone wants more money, so wanting is not the key to having it. Focusing on scarcity attracts scarcity. Focusing on prosperity aligns your energy to pursue prosperity. Now, let's look a little bit more closely at how this works. Your unconscious does not register positive or negative, just the focus. A print or negative, it's the same image. Your unconscious is that image. That magnetized nail that we did a few minutes ago, it doesn't matter what your intent is or what your reasons are. It will only do what it's focused on in a particular way. It will attract that nail, whatever your intention is. The power of focus, whatever you attend to or focus on, you align yourself to create. So be sure you're focused on the right thing, not just avoiding something negative because that's a focus on the negative and that's what will happen. I want to get out of debt. Focus is on debt. Wrong focus. I want to lose weight. Focus is on weight and overweight. And here's one that's kept a lot of dry cleaners really busy. I want to be really careful and not spill something on this new outfit. Dr. Joseph Murray summarized this very succinctly. He said, your subconscious mind does not argue with you. It accepts what your conscious mind decrees. If you say, I can't afford it, your subconscious mind works to make it true. Notice, for example, which people worry about illness. Who talks about pain or disorders? The people who are most afraid of getting sick are the ones that get sick most of the time. What you worry about happens because you focus on it. So, put energy into what you want. Focus on possibilities, not problems. Desires instead of obstacles. To fight something is to engage it, to add energy to it. This creates resistance. When you focus on what you want and pursue that with a strategic plan, what you don't want falls away like your lap when you get up to walk. The pen is in your hand to write your story. You're writing it every day. Consciously or unconsciously, The trick is, and that's the system of the roadmap is one way to do this, is to deconstruct exactly what you're writing in every aspect so that you can understand and create the changes that you want. Now, again, the energy we're talking about is not the energy of stamina, like tired versus refreshed, but energy field, this invisible yet very real connection. Someone's energy field can tell you immediately, as soon as they walk in the room, warm or inviting, cold or stay away, charismatic, energetic. Now, quantum physics offers us still another paradigm to understand. In addition to our individual energy field, there's a collective field. And you can tap into and resonate with this field, the quantum field of possibility. Einstein called it the unified field theory. Basically, he said that our mind and body, individually, we are bundles of energy, and we interact with another person who is also a bundle of energy, or with the larger energy field of a group. This is how we can read people, focus our choices, determine the flow of our future. Here's a controlled study, I think, that illustrates this about the energy field being positive or negative. The NBA plays 84 games a year, 42 at home and 42 away. They play the same people, so it's pretty controlled. They lose. Every team loses almost twice as many games away as they do at home, and vice versa. Away, they're faced with a very negative energy field of 60 to 80,000 people. At home, the same positive energy field. And essentially, most of the people in that auditorium or that facility determine a lot of energy that is then conveyed. So, when you're grounded and connected, and these are physics terms, grounded and connected to yourself, it creates synchronicity. And when we engage in a state of mind that we've developed with deliberate practice, we stay in the zone. We stay in that state of mind that we're not exiting it, we're not thinking about it, but it's staying in the flow, in that zone. Your choices set this flow into motion just as other choices can cause derailment of that process. You set your day in motion. When you wake up happy and excited about what you'll do, the first thoughts of the day boot up a particular mindset that then determines the initial engagement with the day. Days when nothing goes right can usually be traced to an instant when you became disconnected from yourself, a bad feeling or disturbing thought, or even stubbed your toe. You create your state of mind and set yourself on a particular path. That's where the three empowering questions can come in. What can I do today that will be exciting and be a contribution? What can I do today that will make it even better at my work or with my family? The law of attraction is neutral and impersonal. It works easily and equally for positive or negative things, good or bad things. And you keep coming back to what you run away from. You attract what you resist because it's just another form of engagement. So the most important principle is to focus on what you do want rather than what you don't want. Here's an example. I've begun a whole new application of this, of peak performance principles and stress mastery and optimizing performance. The you've probably seen on also on the homepage the first offering that I have for that is a webinar, a four-part webinar. But here's an example from that. When my wife gifted me a few years ago at an anniversary for both of us to to go through the BMW Professional Driving School. So we went to Greensboro, South Carolina, and spent several days there. One of the things that really struck me was how they use the principles. They talked about when you go into a high-speed turn, and you're extremely high-speed, and you create a strategy to do that, don't look or think about what you want to avoid, because that will ensure that you do it or hit it. Look at where you're going, not at what you want to avoid, because you will bring about what you focus on. And I thought, that's directly from my material. These guys have known about it all along. That's one of the things that I see that's totally intriguing about doing some research and writing on peak performance, academic and athletic, and the things that enhance and facilitate that. It's an incredible world of information that much of it is in the last 3 or 4 years. None of it was available a dozen years ago when I made my transition from Scott-free psychoanalysis into mentor coaching. And so much of it is very recent, and I found it terrific fun and very informative to correspond with some neuroeconomics labs and some neuroscientists that are on the cutting edge of this, and to look at integrating what they're doing with how I want to apply it. So most focus now is outside awareness. The challenge is to be aware and target the specific outcomes you want, like when going around to turn at reasonable speed, to focus on where you're going, not what you want to avoid, because that's what your brain will do, is to follow your focus. Discover all the things you focus on that you don't want. And you may even consider briefly, not to indulge your focus, but to make a list of things that you notice thinking about that are not useful, that are negative, so that your to-don't list, it cues your radar for early recognition, so that each time you get diverted, you can immediately recognize it and move to what you do want to focus on. So let's do an articulate your unconscious exercise. You're on mute, so don't worry about saying this out loud. I'm going to ask you to say something out loud. And just do this test to see how it works. I'm going to say a statement, and I want you to follow each statement that I say by saying out loud, "Your wish is my command." And then pause for a moment to be aware of what you're experiencing. So again, I'll make a statement. You say out loud, "Your wish is my command," and just take a quick reading. "I'm tired. I'm late. I feel overweight. I've been eating healthily all day. I just worked out and feel energized." Now, from your readings of your experience, notice the difference between the negative focus and the positive focus, and how you experience that, I would guess, somewhat differently. Now, this is happening all the time. This is simply, as I said, an articulate your unconscious. Your unconscious is always saying that to you. "Your wish is my command." It follows your focus. The whole midbrain follows your focus. And remember, we make decisions at a midbrain level several seconds before we're even aware of consciously processing them in the forebrain to make it logical and conscious and intellectual. In fact, some neuroeconomists have said we make purchase decisions up to 10 seconds before we're actually aware of them, And the primary purpose of the forebrain is to make reasonable and conscious decisions we've already made at a midbrain level. So be aware that your unconscious is always saying, your wish is my command, so be sure you focus on positive things. And again, the ABCs, ask, believe, and create. Just the focus is not enough. You need a strategy and a plan, and that's exactly where you come in as mentor coaches, and your very best and first client can be yourself. Now, thinking this way is not magical. It doesn't work to ask, believe, and receive. It requires discipline. This is why most people don't have spectacular results, because that requires mind and brain consistency. For 25 to 30 days to begin and initiate a change at the mind and brain level. And some simple things, when done consistently, can be changed in a 20 to 30 day period. Others that are more complex take longer. But this is the hard work discipline of doing this. And anytime you want, we've talked about this before, and this is just a reminder. Anytime you want to break a habit, focus on the system. And the system is what you do next, not the goal. That's too abstract. That's too far out there. Focus on the system and disrupt the old pattern. Trying to add something to what you've already been doing is not going to work, because what you add is new and different, but what's there, if you don't disrupt that, is an anatomical reality in your brain. Any fact, any belief, any habit pattern is an anatomical reality in your brain. So you have to disrupt it instead of just hoping that something new will overlay and create a change. William James, the father of American psychology, said simply, wisdom is learning what to overlook. And the other quote, from my favorite grandmother, the secret critic. If you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. I haven't found anything yet that doesn't apply to. Here's a final vignette on focus. One evening, an elder Cherokee told his grandson about a battle that goes on inside people. He said, "My son, the battle is between two wolves inside us all. One is evil. It's anger, jealousy, envy, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority. The other is good. Joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, compassion, and faith." Grandson thought about that for a minute and asked his granddad, "Which wolf wins?" And the old Cherokee simply said, "The one you feed." 3, visualize changes. A prototype study that initiated a more formal study of visualization was one where basketball players at Ohio State University were divided into 3 groups to practice shooting free throws. One group, no practice for a month. Another group, 30 minutes of practice daily shooting free throws. A third group, they practiced imagining shooting perfect free throws, nothing but net, for at least 5 minutes daily for 30 days. They were tested at the end of 30 days. First group, no practice, 0% improvement. Second group, actual practice 30 minutes daily, 24% improvement. The third group, they practiced by visualization only, 23% improvement. So that was essentially the same. Subsequently, the methods, the technique for visualization has been refined and advanced so that people, in most instances, for what they visualize, whatever it is, whether it's intellectual, whether it's physical, the visualization is more effective than actually doing it. But you have to put it in an output channel, and you have to practice. Now, again, at the end of the workbook, I've put a chapter, as I mentioned before, on visualization to look at the visualization as a way of rewiring the brain and affirmations as a way of creating a story to support those visualizations. So that's the mind software component. On brain imaging, the same sequence of firing occurs with visualization as with actual shooting. So, create a vision of success, not of getting there, but of the successful completion, including all of the components, all of the sensory aspects, what it looks and feels like, what you're hearing, what you're seeing, the entire scenario. Then look back to see the path to get there. Now, the most common mistake is having a vague sketch rather than a vision, or looking at how to get there, which is necessary, but the vision is the end point. So you're creating a future memory and then can back into that. This may be useful for certain clients who can't quite imagine being successful or feel afraid of success when they create it again and again, first thing in the morning, last thing before they go to bed. They're creating an experience. It's an entire experience that's etched, and the brain can't tell the difference. So it's like they've done it. They just have to create a pathway to get there, to actualize it, and get it in an output channel. So this can be a useful adjunct for your tools for certain clients in certain situations. So here's an example of a focus and visualization exercise. Focus on the weight that feels good to you. Picture what you'll look like at your ideal weight. Look at those pictures, at that vision, twice a day, beginning and end. Write down your ideal body weight range. And that may vary, 2 or 3 pounds, not any big range. Focus on the body you want, your ideal weight range, your ideal body. Now remember, it has to be your body at an ideal weight. You can't lose weight and have somebody else's body. And it needs to be your body in current time. It can't be a vision of yourself 25 years ago. So don't focus on losing weight, but of actualizing the vision that you have that's positive. So here's an example of a to-don't list. Thinking about, hereditary body size, or how I've always been a certain way, a slow thyroid, slow metabolism, or the spirit of Great Aunt Sally that channeled the curse of large size. Focus on the positive. Look at and admire your body. Be grateful. Keep in mind the pictures you have, because what you focus on is what you'll live into when you have a strategy and plan and stick to it. When you eat, be entirely present to the act of eating and to your body. Visualize the thoroughly chewed food assimilated throughout your body. Think and feel as though your desire is manifest. Create your body as your life intentionally. And remember the ABCs. Ask, believe, and create. Let me give you an example of what I've just talked about. I'm not suggesting to do this in mentor coaching, but I want to give you an example of how I came to recognize some of what I just told you. As a psychiatrist, one of the areas I worked was with eating disorder individuals. And in the beginning, when I began to work in the early 80s, nobody knew anything about that. There were literally hundreds of young women who had bulimia who they thought, when they began work, either in the hospital or outpatient with me, that they had invented it. they were surprised that so many other, and then by the mid to later 80s, it became more recognized. The first conference I did for professionals, there were about 350 people there, and this was the first they had come to recognize of what this really was, that it existed. And this included even people like dentists who didn't know what to make of symptoms until they recognized what cause and effect was from the symptoms themselves. So what I would ask an individual is, at what point in the symptom scenario, in other words, at what point when you began eating symptomatically, did you notice a change in your state of mind? And they'd never thought about that before. Every one of them, 100% of them said, actually the instant before food ever touches my mouth. So they saw how this was an unnecessary symptom. It was a prop in a process and wasn't even necessary as part of the process. And what they were attempting to do was to be effective in changing their state, but food was only the focus. It was the tangible, concretized way that seemed to be cause and effect, but really didn't have anything to do with it. The same, if you think about another example, people were hooked up to an fMRI when they began to sit down to a slot machine. And these are people who were chronically addicted to gambling. For every one of them, the spike in dopamine, the reward, was not when they won or when they started operating. It was the instant before they sat down. It was the anticipation. And that's what we know now from neuroscience. It's the anticipation of something that we do it. And that's what's hard to recognize, but that's what's so addictive. Think about the process of spending. It's the anticipation of making a purchase that kicks in the dopamine, and then that's why we get into a loop about that, because we're always chasing that first high and never can quite get there. It's never quite good enough for long enough, but it's like you have to keep doing it to feel good, to feel better, or hopefully to get that high again. So that's that ushers in an addictive process. So it's difficult to challenge long-held beliefs, and I would suggest, because we don't have time to go into a lot of detail about it, to look at that chapter on the new art and old neuroscience of, or the old art and the new neuroscience. It's about visualization at the end of your workbook. So it's difficult to challenge long-held beliefs because they're just a part of our identity. But a vision starts at the other end at the successful outcome. So if someone has a fear of success or fear of failure, this process of creating a vision bypasses the fear and etches a successful outcome. In the film The Lookout, Lewis, a blind man, helps his mentally challenged roommate make sense of things by thinking of his day as a story. Lewis said, "Start at the end. Can't tell a story if you don't know where it's going." Our possibilities are only limited to the ones we allow ourselves to see. And the neuroscience of a vision, whatever we visualize creates the same activation and the same pathways in neuronal networks as actually seeing it when the image comes through our optic nerve. Replays, such as repeating the vision, programs neural networks and neural pathways to more strongly etch that experience. So you create a future memory to live into, and the brain doesn't know who conjured it. You are reality. The more detailed your visual image is, and the sensory detail, the more experience near it is. And here's a key. You don't make the brain images permanent. The brain changes permanent unless you incorporate it into your story. Otherwise, it doesn't register or gets extruded as noise. This may be why 95% of people who diet gain back their weight plus a pound or two. They don't reprogram their body image. For example, if you see yourself in a successful business, you create the specific imagery to live that experience. You then incorporate it as part of your identity rather than belonging to someone else. But think about how when you picture a danger, you trigger an immediate body response of flight or fight. While your unconscious mind, and this is huge, while your unconscious mind can't tell the difference between something you physically see and something you mentally picture, your conscious mind can't. So your conscious mind has to incorporate this evolving story to include and assemble the imagery as part of the story, as part of your identity. We're going to revisit this when we talk about programming identity, the final step of the roadmap. Otherwise, unconscious messages will simply delete access to or believability of this imagery. It's like, well, it's somebody else or it's just something I did. That's why identity is the final step to make changes that last. So the key elements here, in a simple way, are three. Repetition. The neural networks dedicated to your vision need to be renewed and repeated regularly. Consciously incorporate this new vision into the ongoing story to be metabolized as part of yourself. And be very specific about the experience of achieving the goal. Here's a footnote of a way to get it into an output channel, which completes the circuit in the brain. Write it down. Research on memory tells us that a new idea or fact lasts an average of 40 seconds in short-term memory, then it's gone, unless you write it down to review. Visualization crystallizes possibility into an articulated idea. The experience changes the brain. The vision serves as guide and inspiration to design a way to realize it, to live into it. Here's a simple example. Major James Nesmith spent 7 years as a prisoner of war in North Vietnam. During the time he was imprisoned, he was essentially isolated and had no physical activity. Before the war, Major Nesmith was an average weekend golfer. On two occasions, he had broken 100 by one stroke. He had 299s. Everything else was in triple digits. So to preserve his sanity, he began to visualize golf. He selected his favorite course. He saw himself, he went through this visually in his experience, dressing in his golf clothes, driving to the course, getting out, smelling the fragrance, warming up, hitting each ball, walking to the ball. He did this for an average of 7 to 8 hours each day, 7 days a week. When he was released, this was 7 years, remember, when he was released from his captivity, after playing golf, in his mind, 7 days a week for 7 years, his first outing, he shot a 74. The power of a vision, of mind over matters. So, the other couple of things about mapping changes. Insight changes the brain. We've discussed this before about a moment of insight, an aha experience, activates three different parts of the brain to vault someone into a more synthetic and integrative and creative state of mind. It's state changing. Consider what information, simply stating facts, or suggestions, nothing happens. Any directives, order, information, nothing happens. So, as important as insight-induced change is, the sustained attention hardwires it into the brain circuit. So five, take action. This is Vincent van Gogh's contribution to professional coaching. If you hear a voice saying, I'm not a painter, then by all means paint. Then that voice will be silenced. The world won't pay you for what you know or what you intend to do. To analyze, plan, think, organize, they're important. But payday comes with action. Winners develop a plan, set it into motion, stick to it, and actualize it. This is why group maybe of some of the brightest people anywhere with all kind of degrees can plan and figure something out, but struggle to make it happen. Meanwhile, the guy who barely finished the first semester of community college owns a bunch of real estate on the west side of town. The most important thing about a goal is having one. The most important thing about a plan is to stick to it. Wisdom is to know the right path. Integrity is to take it. A clearly defined goal can capture imagination and inspire passion. It can cut through the fog like a beacon in the night. One extra degree of effort in business and in life can separate the good from the great. 51 publishers turned down Richard Bach to publish Jonathan Livingston Seagull. He took it to number 52. 141 publishers turned down a guy with a really unlikely title for a book that he decided simply to publish it himself and sell it out of the back of his car. Chicken Soup for the Soul. To date, Jack has sold $1.5 billion worth of books and material. To get what you've never had, you probably have to do what you've never done. 6, identity transformation. This is the P. We're going to return to this. Actually, we're going to talk about the last two steps in our final seminar. I wanted to expand as I saw what we were doing and reflecting on this. So, a new experience in the final identity transformation. I just want you to consider, and I want to do an overview because I want to allow some time for interaction. A new experience or idea must be focused on consistently and frequently. When attention and focus is consistent, brain circuitry is stabilized and ultimately rewired. The mindset of identity can then incorporate the new experience and integrate it as part of an evolving self, as a component of identity. We're going to talk more about how to do that next time. Otherwise, it won't be integrated and prone to be dismissed as a not me or attributed to luck or circumstance. So here's a summary of steps 4 and 5. Decide what to change and map the changes. This summary is in your outline. Since old patterns are hardwired, it takes consistency of focus on new experiences to change this wiring. Concentrate on new behaviors, not on problems, in order to create new brain pathways. Identifying a problem won't solve it. Create new ways of thinking to stimulate brain circuits, with an eye on the prize to lay new mental maps. Regulate states of mind and manage emotions to enter an optimum state for performance. Facilitate insight rather than give or follow advice. This is what causes that moment of insight, aha experience, which can happen many times throughout a coaching session. When diverted to an old feeling or behavior, redirect ideas and energy flow to the new ideas. Remember that the power is in the focus and that permanent change is from the consistency of that focus. Focus on successes rather than obstacles or non-performance, because focus aligns and directs both energy and then efforts. Emphasize positive, adaptive behavior and progress. Discourage attention to negative behavior. Knowledge is inert until it's activated. Put it into behavior. It has to be an output channel. Think about your new experience and evolving self, how your new experience requires thinking of yourself, your identity, in an evolving way, no longer in the old story. My finger got a little faster. No longer in the old story. So we have, I thought we'd have a lot more time. I'm interested in any thoughts or questions or comments any of you have.
Hey, Dave, this is Joe.
Hey, Joe, welcome. How are you?
Good, thank you. Real quick, do you have any examples of teaching the new life wellness story to a client that's authorized to have one MP3 or something?
Would you ask that question again? I'm not sure I understood it, Joe.
Yeah, you know, like with the CTA, you know, when you go through the certification course and we get the CDs with examples of coaching methods.
Yeah.
Do you have something like that? Do you have something like that for New Life Story?
That's where when I do the New Life Story training, the licensed specialty certification, I think you're thinking, that's what I use the seminars for. The curriculum has examples, but it has more of the principles and the body of knowledge. The seminars are ones that I use to bring live and in the discussion. There's like 15 minutes of discussion in a true seminar at the beginning and the end. It's there that we do case illustrations. And here's something I'll send to each of you. There is an ebook that has 32 roadmap case studies that I annotate and introduce each of the five sections. I'm glad you reminded me of that, Joe, because I'll send it to everyone, and it gives an example. These are coaches who have done the licensed specialty certification with me, either Wellness Story or Money Story Mentors, and it's cases they've written up either on themselves or their clients, and they found that it was so useful to do a roadmap, to go through this process and look at a case and apply the roadmap principles, that they found that it was the most productive thing of a great deal of the training. And the cases I was so impressed with, they presented it. I was so impressed with it that I edited it and, you know, had it professionally edited. It's an ebook, and it's something I'll send you each access to, where you can directly download it yourself and look at some of the examples and look at the sort of the brackets of introducing each of the sections. Life story, wellness story, money story, relationship story, career stories, and some examples of case studies of each of these. So thank you for mentioning that. I think this will answer maybe some questions that you have and give you some further. It'll be a good late nighttime reading. It may save on your melatonin bill, but it may be helpful to bring alive some of the things we've been discussing from different perspectives. And different coaches' applications of this. So hold on to other questions. We're out of time, and I want to respect that, but thanks for mentioning that. I will fire that off to everyone so that you'll have access to it. And if there are any questions from it, we can talk about that or anything else next time before and after our last seminar. So thanks very, very much. I look forward to picking up right here next time. See you guys. Bye now.
Hi.
See you there. See you. Thank you.
Thank you.